So I have Sabro Sapur here. They're ready to go. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. This is a track from their CD, Music from the Violet Room. Name of this track is Pink. Check it out.
Thank you.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Sabro Sapur. Guys, thanks for coming out to on a Thursday morning.
Yeah,
thank you.
To share your music with us. So let's just start with introductions. Who are you and what do you play?
I'm Will. I sing and play guitar.
I'm Jeff. I play guitar and foot bass.
I'm Jacob and I play the drums.
Cool. And is it just the three of you in the band?
Yeah.
Has it been that way for a long time?
For a long time now, but we did start out with a bass player. She quit, and then we decided, you know, we kept doing shows without a bass player and figured, well, what the hell?
Was that weird at first? Like, because a lot of rock bands, they feel like they need to rely on the bass for rhythm or to complete the sound somehow. Do you guys feel that you made up for it with other things? Or
yeah, well, Jeff came up with the idea of actually using a keyboard on the floor that he taped some broken drumsticks to play some bass notes where we needed it. Sometimes we don't need bass at all, but certain songs really need that. So he has this keyboard set up on the floor. It's kind of a poor man's version of Moog pedals.
Is that, you think that's a big part of what Sabro Sapur is about, is sort of innovation?
Yeah.
Like coming up with alternative ways of making sound?
It's really just making do with whatever you have. Like, it wasn't, I mean, I think some people think maybe we tried to be cool because we had this keyboard on the floor and he plays it with his feet and he bends down and plays, you know, piano stuff with his hand, but it was really just out of necessity. So it's kind of like whatever, you know.
Yeah, it would be too much if you were also, like, painting something with your feet while you're doing that.
My other foot.
Yeah.
Decorating a cake with his other hand.
Are you guys ready to jump into a live song?
Sure.
Yeah.
What do you got for us?
This is Liars, Petty Thieves, and Pets.
All right, let's do it. My guest is Sabro Sapur. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. Honesty, your friend. Wow. Nice. Where to begin? Where to begin? So let's start with it's kind of a silly question, but I'm curious about the name of the band because it's kind of an unusual name. It has a real ring to it. So
no
tell me about
no
coming up with that.
I just wanted a name that didn't mean anything other than the band. You know, it couldn't be confused with anything else or whatever. But it really happened by accident because I was just writing down names of song titles that I thought might, you know, give me an idea for a cool band name. And Sabrosa is a Beastie Boys song, and Purr is a Sonic Youth song. And they happened to be one right after the other on a list of potential names. So when I was reading through it, it was like Sabrosa, Purr, this, that, whatever. And
nice.
I thought, wow, that sounds really cool.
Nice.
And then everybody's like, that's a stupid name. You should change it.
Yeah. So, oh, no.
But I think
no,
people
to the
like
contrary,
it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, literally translated in Klingon, it means Galactic Overlord, which I think is awesome.
You don't say.
So it's sweet.
Unfortunately, Jacob's mom kind of thought that it was literal because Sabrosa means flavorful or tasty, and
right.
Purr is related to a cat, which has all
yeah,
kinds
my
of
mom,
connotations.
My mom put it together. She went ahead and dug for the
sexual.
She thought
it had a really
oh, wow.
dirty sexual
she,
name.
She asked if you were down with OPP.
Yeah,
is that
yeah
from
and
there?
I was really embarrassed. You don't want your drummer's mom like you know, thinking that kind of stuff. But
especially when she thinks that your singer's got a beautiful voice. So.
And I'm not clever enough to think of a name that's that, you know. That was,
impressive.
Yeah, so.
How did Sabrosa Purr, just how did the band concept start in the very first place? Like, did it start with just one guy on a guitar and asked his friends to join, or was it a spontaneous?
Started with one guy in a dream and
one man
Titusville,
Florida.
Florida.
Dreaming the big dream.
I was actually trying to, I was writing songs and recording them in my bedroom, basically, and just kind of coming up with some of the songs that are actually on our EP. Like the first song you played, Pink, is a kind of an old song. And so I was always trying to put the band together. And Jacob answered a Craigslist ad. I'm sure this will start to happen like over the years. More and more bands will come together because of Craigslist.
Oh, yeah, you're definitely not the first
who's
come together because
eventually
of
it'll be all bands came together because of Craigslist.
Yeah.
But Jeff and Jacob were actually in another band before, or at the same time. And Jacob just started playing sort of with me on the side. I was the strange that made his life exciting.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think it is? What do you guys think it is that made you want to play with Will?
I met Will. He wrote this this great Craigslist posting that was kind of it just had a great tone to it. It was very it was kind of this tirade, but it was very
arrogant.
Comical. It was kind of like you know, all right, who wants to open for Radiohead in a year and a half and drugs and orgy and sex? But it had this tone to it. It was really clever, and I thought, oh, this guy's a you know. So I contacted him and I met with them, and then I took he had this little recording home, and I took it, and I went, wow, there was an old song on it that we don't play I heard the voice, and it had this very different feel, and it just kind of had this mood to it. I thought, this would be interesting to play. It was very different than what I was writing with Jeff, and then I was kind of just looking for a side project to just be playing a lot. And then, so I came down with Will, and we started playing, and he was tinkering around with the idea of another guitar part, another player. And I said, I happen to live with one of the best guitar players in L.A. Why don't we see if he comes in and... So Jeff
nice.
Came in and
I was like, yeah,
started
right.
jamming.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and then it was so it was cool. It was a very kind of unexpected, you know, like.
It just felt very, very like you know, he said, he kept saying, my roommate's a really great guitar player. And I was like, oh, okay, whatever. And we actually were playing some shows, and Jeff would just show up and be in the audience, and he was probably like, God, that dude can't play guitar. I should be in the band.
And, he needs my help.
He needs my help.
He needs my help.
So then, but we did play together, and you know, I'd say, can you do something kind of like this? And he'd be like this? And it would be perfect. So I'd be like, oh, yeah, just like that. And
wow. We're still talking about rehearsal at this point,
yeah,
so.
Yeah. So it just felt great, you know, and I'd been trying to put the band together for a while, and you know, nobody really wanted to play with me because that's really sad, isn't it? But then,
well, the way it's phrased is particularly sad.
Yeah,
I know what you mean.
But then when you finally find the right people, and it just all clicks, and there you go.
So it was the early rehearsal days. You guys sort of had a sense right off the bat that you were going to actually work as a band.
Yeah, I mean, I distinctly remember coming in and like having literally like Will said, I remember him saying on one of our songs, yeah, I need this to kind of, the second guitar part should kind of feel like such and such. And then Jeff hit a couple of pedals and did this chord, and I was like, wow, you know, like it was just kind of one of those things. And we all write songs, and we all write in the same way. and we all kind of have the same philosophy about song structure and writing in terms of like what each thing does to it, and coming from a feeling place as opposed to, hey, Jeff, why don't you take a kick-ass solo right there? And,
although there's nothing wrong with the kick-ass solo.
Nothing wrong with
the
kick-ass solo.
Nothing wrong with the kick-ass solo.
Is Suppressa Purr like completely a collaborative process, or Will, do you write most of the songs and then bring them to the band?
In the beginning, it was like we started off with songs that I had already written, and they were cool enough to actually like be like, yeah, those are cool, let's play them. Whereas a lot of people that I met with, I'd be like, I have these songs we could start off with and start doing some shows and see where it goes. And most people would be like, oh man, fuck that. I need total creative input into mm-hmm. everything that I play. And it's like, all right. But they were just great to work with as far as like, that's a cool song, let's do it. Like no ego, you know, like, yeah, all right. And but then as we've been playing longer, like then things come out in rehearsal that we, you know, just some song comes out of nowhere. And then plus we all just now know exactly what kind of works, you know, like you don't really have to talk after a couple of years, like about where you think it might need to go or you'd want it to go. Is that?
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys agree with that.
And being, you know, given that Jeff and I write, and when we had a band before this, when we were also auditioning other members and stuff, and like we understand the process of like if there's a song that's down and together, like just show up and play. Like I took a CD home and I learned the parts like note for note, and I have no problem playing that if something is already existent. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'll just play.
Yeah, he's the only drummer that ever actually learned the parts like note for note. Like, you know, people would show up and be like, yeah, I kind of gave that song a listen. It's like,
well,
dude.
Well, that's why they make, that's why they make jokes about drummers and bands being, you know, like, what do you call a guy who hangs out with the band? The drummer.
Yeah, exactly.
We've kind of turned that into the bass player now that we're right. Bass playerless.
Do you feel like Suppressa Purr has a definite sound? Like, do you ever bring in a song and then you guys collectively decide, you know what, this isn't a
totally.
Suppressa Purr
yeah,
song?
Yeah, there's, yeah. There's a couple that were just like really super commercial sounding, like, you know, just wow, that's like a 3.5 minute song that every 13-year-old girl in the world's gonna love, and then you play it and you're like, wow, I feel really cheesy. But I'm at the same time, I don't feel really cheesy because I like I like a lot of pop songwriters. Like, I mean, the Beatles and the Beach Boys were pop songwriters and they're fucking badass. But you know, you kind of sort of say, well, maybe that doesn't really feel like a Suppressa Purr song.
Well, how do you guys reconcile that sort of need to be accessible in order to be successful financially with a band, but also wanting to keep true to your roots and be truly independent? Like,
well,
is that a struggle?
I think it's actually, I think when you edit yourself, just like we explain that we do, like that's too, you know, sounds like too much like a radio song. I think you're not being true to yourself. I think if you were true to yourself, you would do kind of whatever with unfiltered. You would just, if you wrote a song that was like, oh my God, that sounds like whatever. I don't know. Think of really, you know what I'm saying,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and you should just fucking do it. But you kind of censor yourself, which is, people say that's staying true, but I think it's actually, I don't know. I think it's kind of,
it's a double-edged sword, really.
You know
is.
What I mean?
Yeah.
I think people tend to try to go out of their way to stay out of that bracket of, oh, this is a I mean, I heard this great quote. I'm not a huge fan of the Goo Goo Dolls by any means. I don't want to pigeonhole myself.
Great. Now we're never going to get the tour of the Goo Goo Dolls. Thanks, man.
I mean, I heard a great quote on like storytellers and where he said, like, you know, we got all this flack because we started off as kind of a punk band and the bass player was singing a lot of songs and we were rocking and playing CBGBs.
And they're really known now
and
as
they're
a
really,
pop band.
Absolutely. Right. They're kind of the adult contemporary, you know, they're like the headliners.
Big power ballad kind
of
thing.
But he's
and
like,
credits to a romantic comedy kind
exactly.
of music.
And he said, you know, he said it was really hard for him because he's like, dude, we're still the same guys writing songs. These songs are still coming from us. So he's like, I like these songs and I like the songs that are more rocking. It's still us writing them. It's not that we have changed. They're just different components to it. I mean, like, you know, I mean, you can listen to anybody, Led Zeppelin, Beatles, Pink Floyd, and like their stuff is all over the map, and you can't say like, oh well, you know, I only like that aspect, and they're not being true because they wrote well, it came out of them, you know. Yeah. And if it was an organic kind of construction, you know, like this thing came out, then
yeah,
it's
every song I've
are.
Ever written has come out completely the same way. It just comes out, and sometimes it's just some weird rambling noise rock thing, and sometimes it's like, you know, it's got a really great melody and you can wrap it up in a bow and it's like 3 minutes long and they just come out the same way. So what's the fucking difference, you know? And that's when, I don't know, that's kind of one of my, it's sort of a beef I'd have with like the rest of the music community is I think there's some great bands that could be, that censor themselves and they end up cheating not just themselves but also the music community by not sort of allowing themselves to
sort of biting off your nose despite your face.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
It's yeah, like yeah. It's like, you know, I don't know.
Well, why don't we go to another live song, and then I want to talk a bit about how you've been received by your audience thus far.
All right.
What do you got for us?
This is called Sucker Punch Kiss.
All right. My guest is Sabrosa Purr. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Sabrosa Purr. So the first time you guys played live as a band in front of a live audience, all the rehearsals are done. You guys are ready to show what you're made of. What was that experience like? Were you guys really nervous? Were you not sure if you'd be liked, or were you surrounded by a lot of friends and family that make you confident? What was going on?
We've actually had a lot of support from our friends, which has been really cool. But the first show, of course, you're like really nervous because you don't want to suck, and we probably did suck,
yeah,
at least a little.
But you feel like you rule the world at that point, you know, when you're starting out and you're writing songs and you're just excited to be in a band and on stage, you know, you're just like, yeah, we're the greatest band in the world, you know, and know, and then 2 years later, you look back, you're like, man, we sucked. But, you know, that's part of the process of just being in a band.
And after you guys started gigging out a lot more, what were some of the things that audience members were coming up and telling you afterwards?
People come up and they say, man, don't take this the wrong way, but, like, you know, I could totally, like, at the end there, just, like, lean back with my eyes closed and just sort of, you know, just trip out. And, you know, that's always cool, you know, being told that you're putting people to sleep.
They also say, hey, man, I know a good bass player that I think would really
bass players
low end there.
Bass players always think we need a bass player. Bass players and A&R guys think we need a bass player.
Yeah.
That's it.
What do you want your audience to get? I mean, it sounds like that one guy was describing, you know, sort of going on a journey with your music.
Yeah, and that's exactly it, man. Like, we don't... I don't think we want to just be any one thing, you know? I mean, it's great to, like, you know, all of our favorite bands do everything. You know, they have the peaks and the valleys. You know, they have these pretty long, you know, these pretty songs that are just sort of, you know, these little, I don't know, gorgeous little nuggets.
Well, just so we can go back later and you can go, God, I can't believe I was into that band. What are some of the bands that you guys are really into right now?
right now.
Or that influence your music?
For me, and people always get it wrong, like, and I won't say how they get it wrong, but people never realize what a huge Prince fan I am. Like, I think Prince is the fucking shit.
You're not even the fourth rock band to reference.
See,
Prince
that's good
as an
then. That's
on this
awesome.
Show. I've interviewed about 70 bands, and
the title of our EP is my not knowing the exact lyric, but Music from the Violet Room comes from a Prince lyric, which is actually. On Sign of the Times, he says, earlier I'd been talking stuff in a violent room. I always thought he said violet room because, you know, he's all into purple and shit. So I was like, yeah, music from the violet room.
Why do you think Prince is such a heavy influence on so many rock bands?
Because he's fucking badass. I don't know.
The music's not rock.
He takes risks as a musician,
respect what he does because it's, I mean, it's just.
And he is a professional.
People don't understand, like, what a huge influence he was, like, on
Trent Reznor.
Like, yeah, Nine Inch Nails. I mean, if you listen to, like, the shit he was doing, like, on 1999 and Purple Rain, not just the radio stuff, but, like, all the deep album tracks that people probably don't know. Like, you're hearing the stuff that came before OK Computer and The Fragile and shit like that, you know, and musicians understand that. I think the general public thinks he's basically like Michael Jackson, but musicians, I think, really get that, you know?
Yeah.
Do you think there's this big divide between sort of what the general public understands about music and what musicians, true
Absolutely.
Musicians understand?
Yeah.
Is it a huge gap?
Yeah, huge.
I think, so.
I think most people think that that what they hear on the radio and what they see on TV or whatever is the cream of the crop, you know, because they just think, well, this must be the best.
It made it to TV.
Yeah.
It's on the radio.
We all know that's not the case.
Right.
You know.
Yes, that's so
true.
I'm
sure we're preaching to the choir here.
Yeah. Will, how did you get into playing guitar in the first place?
That goes back to nobody wanting to play with me. I was originally a drummer. And we could never find a singer that would, you know, in the bands I was in. So I was like, well, I can kind of sing. So I'll sing. And I was, like, painfully shy. Like, it was really hard.
But you knew you wanted to do music?
Oh, yeah,
from an
absolutely.
Early age.
Yeah. And then I was like, yeah, all right, singing, right on. I'll do this. But then, like, I could never keep a band together. And I'm like, well, I'll just learn how to play guitar because it can't be that hard. And, like Radio has said, anybody can play guitar. And it's kind of true.
So you just taught yourself and just
practiced? Yeah, like I was just making these demos, and I was like, well, if I can't put a band together right now, I still want to write songs. So then it actually works out great because I don't really play guitar like somebody that knows what they're doing or, you know what I mean, that was taught in a certain way. And that's how, like, the early songs got written. And honestly, like, I didn't even start playing guitar until we started rehearsing for gigs. Then it was like, oh, shit, all right, let's go. Let's learn how to do this.
Nice.
You know? So
what were your first couple of songs about, like, thematically?
As they pertain to this band?
Even before Sabrosapur, like, what, when you felt that you, there was something inside you that made you think, okay, I have to write songs. You didn't know what you were going to play, you didn't know if you were going to sing yet, but you knew you wanted to write songs. Were there things going on in your life that you wanted to talk about, or did you have more conceptual, were you telling stories?
Well, yeah, I'm completely self-absorbed when it comes to song lyrics and stuff. I don't do those, like, storytelling songs, and not that I don't like them, I'm just not good at it, I guess, or I'm just completely self-absorbed, so I just
or you have great stories
myself.
That are about
but
you.
But I mean, I think most most like rock music, whatever kind of rock music you're talking about, is essentially the blues. It's or there, it's either the blues or like, I mean, Nirvana's the blues, right? I mean, kind of. He's singing about being bummed out. You're singing about girls, or you're singing about being fucking bummed out, or you're singing about being angry, or you're singing about, it's all the same shit.
There's not a lot of great rock songs about what a nice day it is outside.
Right. And even like, if it is, it's probably not really about what a nice day it is.
Right. It's a metaphor.
Lou Reed,
yeah.
You know, that's a song about, being strung out in the park or whatever. So.
And Jeff, what went wrong in your life that made you want to get into music?
My parents severely beat me as a child. I just got a guitar when I was a kid. I was around 13, and I just started playing and couldn't think of anything better to do with my life. And so I just said, this will make my parents sufficiently angry. So
his parents are going to be really happy to hear that after they...
But was that it? Like once you got bit by the music bug, that you were pretty much sold on it?
I went to school and everything. I went to college and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And sort of through that process, just started playing a lot more music and realized that this is what I'm passionate about. And it makes me the most fulfilled in my life. And so I just said, let's give it a try and see what happens.
Do you think there's something specific about the way you play guitar? Are there certain things that you do or would like to do with guitar that maybe you don't see other guitar players doing?
Bringing back the double tap.
Yeah, I like...
if you work really hard on your craft, people would be able to... there's some guitar players you can hear a song and go, oh, that must be so-and-so playing that guitar.
Yeah,
he has that way of playing.
I'm working on a triple bend here, so he can
outbend David Gilmour.
Nice.
We'll get that signature triple bend there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know personally what my style is because I'm in it, so it's hard for me to listen from an outsider's perspective, So I just feel like I play what I hear in my head, but I don't know what that sounds like from other people's perspective.
It's hard to be objective about your own style or how people perceive it, I guess.
Yeah.
You think maybe that's something that. Part of what makes a good musician is sort of the ability to get what's in your head through the instrument without any interference in between.
That's the hardest part, I think. Songwriting or guitar playing or any musical instrument you're playing, if trying to translate thoughts into notes is the hardest part.
And Jacob, were you always a rock drummer?
No, I've only been playing drums for a couple of years, actually. Technically, I guess this is my fourth September, but I took about a year off from rigorous practice. I was... I played guitar first, and I was always into music and stuff, but I wasn't doing it on any kind of, I wasn't pursuing or anything. And I went to college. Jeff and I went to college together at UC Berkeley, and I was a big martial artist growing up. That was my thing, was martial arts, so I was into that. And then I hurt my back and yada, yada, yada. But music was such a massive part of my life, whether I was grocery shopping or, training for a tournament. So I thought, man, I'd love to do this. It's in my family. My uncles all play guitar, and so I got a guitar, and I just picked it up really quickly and thought, I literally was sitting one day going, I think I should get a drum kit. I think I'd be good at that because martial arts and all that stuff. And I got a drum kit. And,
martial arts drums,
I met Will.
Well, I could see the parallel, though. Martial arts being very much about rhythm and hitting things.
I was very regimented, and I still am, when I actually go practice, and I was really particular about balance and all. I mean, I was just really, very focused about it and very hard on myself about it. But when I met Will, I'd been playing for a year, and he'd been auditioning all these people that had been playing for I don't know how long.
And I've been playing drums since I was 12, so when he told me that he was playing for a year, I wasn't even going to meet with him because I was like, there's no way you pick up drums in a year. And I didn't want a drummer that I could play better than. That would just
right,
be annoying.
Because you weren't playing the drums. Yeah.
Right. But
I don't
know how people pick up drums in a year, but he did it.
I just kept, and at that point I decided wow, this is, I had one moment where I was at my dad's place and I was playing in his barn to some music, and I literally went, oh, I should probably stop for lunch. I've been playing for about 2 hours, and I've been playing for 5 hours straight, and I had no idea that it had been that long. And I went, well, I think I could probably do this thing. I could probably invest a lot of time into this because I just would get so lost in it. So it's been really great. And
music's addictive.
What are some of the things that you do as a drummer in Sabrosa Purr that maybe you don't hear in any other band?
My focus has always been, I had a great teacher in the Bay Area named Steve Bowman, and who used to play with the Counting Crows back in the day. He was the original drummer, and he told me two things. He said, always play with a metronome, you know, click track, so you're always in time. And he said, play what you think the singer is feeling. And that thing always stuck with me. We do these great exercises that were just about the feeling of the song. Like, okay, if you've got a verse and you want it to feel a certain way, maybe it's closed hi-hats, maybe it's what... So I'm really particular about, like, adding parts and being really specific about it. Like, you know, does it need this? Does it need that? Like, not necessarily going to one cymbal because it's now a chorus. You know, like, maybe I'll stay over here. Maybe I won't add that extra bass drum beat. And I mean, we get really into it. Like, especially when we record, I tend to be very minimalistic. I'll start taking things out and just going like, what's stepping over guitars? What's da-da-da, you know, and like,
it's less about rhythm and drums and more about the song. That's what's great about, you know, I think all of us is playing for the song and not for their instrument. So many people are like, I'm a guitar player, and all they think about and all they hear is what they're playing. It's like, you're not playing guitar right now. When you're in a band, you shouldn't be playing your instrument. You should be playing songs. Mm. Everybody should be playing songs.
Well said.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.